You're listening to the British Birth Stories podcast, the place where mothers from around the country share their birth stories. I am your host, Ashley Brennickmeyer, and I'm so glad that you're here. On today's episode, I have the pleasure of chatting with Grace, who is the mother of Iris. She shares her journey to motherhood and her birth story, as well as her experience with her daughter in the NICU and her journey breastfeeding. She also had a miscarriage in between her first baby and her current pregnancy, and shares candidly her experience of that loss as well. She and I are Instagram mom friends, first and foremost, so this is our first time chatting in real life. So I hope you enjoy her story as much as I did. Here's Grace. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Grace. I'm so excited to talk to you and hear your story and journey to motherhood. And let's go ahead and jump right in. And can you tell us a little bit about yourself and who you live with and where you live?
Yes. Hi. Thank you for having me on, by the way, Ashley. So I live in a lovely Palmer's Green flat with my partner, Sparrow. Who is like funnily enough in the other room putting up a Christmas tree. and I live with my daughter Iris, who is 21 months. I am pregnant for the second time. I'm about 6 months pregnant. And yes, that's a little bit about myself. It's funny when people ask, I kind of go on a bit of a tangent, but actually all I need to do is just say that.
No, that's brilliant. I also want to just mention as well your clothing shop that you have as well, if you wanted to talk about that for a sec.
Yes, so a few months ago I started an online kids clothing boutique. I created it during lockdown. I was kind of at home, not really doing much, and I've always been interested in fashion. And since I've had Iris, I'm like obsessed with kids clothes and kids toys and you know, I follow so many amazing brands on Instagram, and I kind of was like, actually, why don't I try and do something myself? So I started that during lockdown, and it's kind of been going really good at the moment. So hopefully it stays on that track. It's keeping me busy. So it's great.
It's so cute. I'll link it in the show notes because I bought something for my daughter from you.
Yes, you did.
And I'm really excited about that as well. So let's go ahead and jump right in into your pregnancy journey with Iris. Were you trying to fall pregnant with her when you did?
No. Well, I guess we weren't exactly trying, but we weren't exactly not trying. I was quite young when I fell pregnant. I was 22 when I got pregnant with Iris. Me and my boyfriend Sparrow had always spoken about having kids young. So it was kind of a thing that we knew we were going to do. It was just kind of, we didn't have a time frame on it. And I remember we went to Bali for a couple of weeks, and I fell pregnant there. I was super rubbish with contraception and actually hated being on it. So we decided that I'd do the natural cycle, but that didn't work for me. I mean, I guess I think you have to be really organized, and I'm not. So I fell pregnant in Bali. We were super excited about it. I think at the beginning, obviously I found out and was kind of, you know, like, oh my goodness, what are we going to do? I'm 22. We were living in a small studio flat. And I actually remember, I remember not coming on my period and saying to Sparrow, okay, I think I might be pregnant. I'm not 100% sure. We kind of put it off, and that was on Saturday. And then I remember Sparrow went to work on Monday super early. And I was like, okay, he's gone to work. And then I went to the toilet before I started getting ready, and he had left a pregnancy test on the toilet. and I was like, okay, I'm just going to do it now. You know, there was nothing romantic about it. I just did it, and I actually remember feeling like, oh my goodness. But I remember calling Sparrow, and his reaction was so amazing. He was so excited. And actually, that made me so excited. So, despite being young and kind of having no one around me being pregnant, I was, you know, super up for it. And thank God we kind of went through and did it, because it's just been the most amazing thing. But yeah, that's kind of how I found out I was pregnant. And yeah.
So sweet. And how did you feel out the get-go, and how was your pregnancy?
The get-go, I mean, when I found out the first week, I was kind of super like, is this really happening? But once I got into it, it was great. I had an amazing pregnancy. I felt like really well the whole time, like was eating everything, felt super chilled and relaxed. I kind of used it as the best excuse kind of ever. I just stayed in, ate food, watched series, and yeah, it was brilliant. I absolutely enjoyed it. I mean, I was really lucky, and I guess being young is like a massive factor of it, kind of. You know, I didn't struggle at all. But yeah, I know how lucky I am about that. I mean, my sister-in-law with her second was so, so, so ill, you know, couldn't leave the house, and was like put on a drip and stuff. And I actually feel like, you know, pregnancy can go either one way or the other. And thank God my pregnancy went in a really good direction. So yeah, that was really, really good.
And then did you know which care avenue you wanted to go down, via the NHS or private, and what did you end up choosing?
So we chose midwife-led care through the NHS. We have never had private healthcare, so it was kind of no question with going with the NHS. I'm really lucky. Sparrow's auntie is a midwife at the Whittington, so that was also in the back of my mind of kind of going with the NHS and doing it that way.
Amazing. Usually with the NHS, it's kind of a roulette game of, in terms of care providers who attends your meetings. So were you able to meet up with the midwife who was Sparrow's auntie?
No, it was amazing. I would meet up with her every month, I'd say, which was fantastic. I also did have my appointments with other midwives, which actually took me back a little bit, because it kind of made me realize, obviously I love the NHS, I think it's amazing. However, when I had my appointments with the midwife, not Spira's auntie, with the midwife through the NHS, it was always a different midwife. There was never kind of one that I would see, you know, every appointment. And I think that kind of threw me off a little bit, and kind of made me feel really grateful that I did have Sparrow's auntie kind of by my side, and to, you know, be able to be there to support me. So it was really great having her. Also being young, you know, having someone who's there but is also family, like really made a difference to my birth, I think.
Sure. And then did you choose to do an antenatal class?
So we went with hypnobirthing, which was fantastic. We did it with a lovely lady called Claire. And she was amazing. She was very gentle and calm and very positive about birth. I really loved it, because every week we'd go and it would really get me in the headspace of kind of what was going to happen. I kind of feel like I wasn't really around a lot of people that were having babies. Obviously, I think my age, you know, not loads and loads and loads of my friends, or not any of my friends, were having babies at the time. So I didn't really have anyone to kind of talk about it with, apart from Sparrow. And, you know, we'd never done it before. So going to her once a week kind of got us in the headspace of what was going to happen. And, you know, we'd hear positive birth stories, and we met other people that were pregnant. And actually, there was a girl in the class called Shannon, who I'm still friends with. And, you know, we ended up becoming really good friends. And I think that was also really special. I could kind of be around other people that were expecting to do the same thing as I was doing. But yeah, I mean, I absolutely loved hypnobirthing. I think I loved the classes way more. You know, Claire would give us activities to do when we went home, and during the week and like an audio book to listen to. The book was Your Baby, Your Birth by Holly DeCruz. And I remember kind of feeling like I had to do it. You know, I kind of wasn't the person that, you know, read all the baby books and, you know, researched all the things I needed to do to get ready for birth. And I remember feeling like, oh gosh, have I done enough to know what to do? And it's so funny because once you've had a baby, you really realize that it's the most natural thing. And, you know, when it comes down to it, your body knows exactly what it's doing. You know, people have babies when they don't even realize they've been pregnant. So it's, you know, I kind of also want to put it out there that if you're not into it and if you're not into the baby classes and antenatal classes, it doesn't matter. As long as you feel comfortable and positive and, you know, safe, you can, you know, have a baby and you know exactly what you're doing.
That's interesting you say that, actually, speaking of safety, because a few months ago I'm still pregnant, but while I was also pregnant earlier, I was just wading through the heaviness of like trying to fight for all my rights with this COVID regulations and reading all these books and just trying to get up on my birthrights and just feeling so heavy. And then I happened to come across this quote by Michelle Odant, who says something about, I usually don't recommend pregnant women spend their time reading because their time's too precious. Instead, they should sing to their babies about the stars. And I just was like, that's all I want to do. I don't want to have to do so all this.
Oh my God, it made me want to cry. But it's so true. It's like, you know, actually, and it's kind of the same as when the baby's here as well. You know, all babies need is love and care and affection. And actually, you know, if you're not reading all the books, you don't stress about it. You know, I remember feeling a little bit stressed and kind of being like, oh my goodness, am I doing enough? I actually remember lying in the bath and listening to one of the audiobooks that we had to listen to. And I was just so not into it. I was kind of like, I just want to have a bath. I just want to relax. And I just want to eat. That's all I want to do. And I remember feeling like I had to do it. And actually looking back on it now, I mean, I'm pregnant now. So I've kind of gone a kind of different route. And it's more like, you know, you just got to let it go and kind of go with the flow kind of thing. Yeah, I think pregnancy, you know, people have babies in tribes and in the middle of nowhere with none of these baby classes around, and they are absolutely fine. So it's, you know, you don't always need all the books and research and blogs and
I want to be like a full resounding yes to that. And then I think we'll talk about this a little bit later, because you said that you're pregnant with your second now.
Yeah.
But it's harder to do that, I'm finding, than I would like in this pandemic.
Yes, 100%. And also harder to do it the second time round when you have to look after another human. It's like, no one has that. You know, I don't have any time to sit down and read, let alone read a baby book.
Speaking of babies, I think this could be the perfect segue into, how did the birth of your baby begin and how did labor start for you?
So labor was, it's funny, thinking back to it now makes me super like, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to do that again. It's not that long, in a couple of months. So labor started. I remember waking up one morning and I just had this feeling that it was going to happen that day. I mean, it didn't happen that day. It happened 2 days later, but I had a feeling I was going to kind of, the process was all going to start. And my boyfriend Sparrow was getting ready for work. He's a freelancer. So it's kind of when work comes in, he takes it. And I remember going to the toilet and I had my bloody show. And I was so confused. I mean, going to the toilet and seeing blood is, you know, you get a little bit scared. But I remember thinking, okay, you know, it's a week to my due date. probably this, and I called up my sister-in-law, Kelly. She'll probably listen to this, and actually I should say sorry, because it was 5 o'clock in the morning and I called her and I was like, Kelly, oh my goodness, I'm going to send you a picture now of something that's just come up. And I sent her a picture of it, and she was like, yeah, Grace, that's the bloody show. Don't worry. Like, if you can, go back to sleep, get as much rest as you can, like while you can. And I remember running into Sparrow and being like, you can't go to work. Like, I'm going to have the baby. And he was like, obviously he thought that my waters had broke, and he kind of like was, you know, okay, let's get in the car kind of thing. And I was like, no, it's just kind of started. And he kind of looked at me and was like, okay, so do you reckon I can go to work or not? And I was like, no. But yeah, that was about 5 a.m. and I remember going back to sleep for 2 hours and then waking up and kind of thinking, was that a dream? And then realizing obviously it wasn't. And I called my mum, because my mum was also going to be my birth partner, as well as Sparrow. And yeah, I remember feeling like super nervous, but also quite calm, and kind of the pain obviously hadn't started. And I remember sending Sparrow out to McDonald's and being like, okay, I want 2 Big Macs. And we went for a little walk after that, and my mum came, and it was super nice. You know, the contractions were coming in, but not super strong. And then it got to the evening, and obviously the contractions were getting stronger and more painful, but like doable. It was kind of like a strong period pain. And I kind of remember thinking, right, is this it? Like, is this what everyone's, you know, speaks about, saying it's like the worst pain in the whole entire world, and thinking, I'm fine, I'm going to be absolutely fine. And then I remember going to bed that night, and then at about 10 o'clock, the contractions came like a ton of bricks. I kind of was up and down the whole night. You know, they were coming every 5 minutes, and then it would go to every 2 minutes. And obviously, me and my mum, when they say it's like every 2 to 3 minutes, you kind of should go into the hospital. So that was at about 10 o'clock in the evening. It was going, 5 minutes to 2 minutes, like kind of up and down. And then when it was like a solid every 2 minutes, we were like, okay, let's go into the hospital. And we live in Palmer's Green, and our hospital is in Highgate, which isn't too bad, but it's about a 15-minute drive. And I remember having contractions in the car and being like, oh my God, this is probably the worst thing. But, you know, obviously doable as well. I kind of don't want to put out that it is the worst thing in the world, because it really isn't. You know, I think women are, you know, made to do this. And actually, I think I hear so many horror stories about birth. And actually, I don't want my birth story to be a horror story, because it wasn't. But anyway, going back to it, we were in the car going to the hospital, and we got there and parked up. Obviously, we went in, and there was this Irish midwife that was there, and she was like, oh, okay, you're in labor, come in. And went in, and she, you know, checked and went straight in there and was like, okay, had a little feel around, and was like, looked at me, and then looked at Sparrow and my mum, who were sitting like directly opposite my vagina. And kind of, I was looking at them and they were looking at me, and it was like, oh my goodness. And I was in so much pain. And she looked at them and then looked at me and was like, oh, you're not in labor. You're only 1 centimeter dilated. You're not in labor. You have to go home. And I remember feeling like so disheartened, and I felt a bit embarrassed. I remember kind of looking at my mum and Sparrow and like being like, I am, like, I really am in pain. Like, I'm not putting on, you know, kind of trying to, you know, like prove to them that I was in labor. I remember leaving and getting in the car and going home, and just, I think that was like the middle point, you know, when they, when you're in classes and when you do hypnobirthing, they teach you that you have this like middle part of labor where you kind of feel like you just can't do it. And I think that that was that point for me. I was in the car and I remember just being like, I don't think I can do this. Like, I don't think I'm cut out for this. And obviously, you know, we are, and all women can do it. It's just, you just have to have the support. And I remember just feeling like I didn't from that one midwife. But obviously, I think Sparrow and my mum were a little bit the same. Like, you know, she didn't have to say it like that, but it's fine. We're going to go home. You're going to go to sleep and, you know, it will carry on and it will, you know, it will come. The baby will come. So yeah, I remember going home and Sparrow and my mom went back to sleep. Like we must have got home at about 2 in the morning. Sparrow and my mom went back to sleep. And I just remember lying in bed, like obviously not being able to sleep because the contractions were every 5 minutes or every 2 minutes. It was kind of going up and down. And I remember I got up and down off the bed so much that the bed broke. And I remember waking up Sparrow being like, oh, bed's broken. And we had to like prop it up with books. It was like this silly old vintage bed. And yeah, ended up having to get rid of it. But that was quite funny. Looking back on that, it kind of makes me laugh. But at the time, I was so, so, so angry. But yeah, I mean, I guess I got like 5 minutes here and there that night. And then the morning came, thank God. And I remember my mum running me a bath, and I kind of, that was like my 14th bath of the day, of the whole period of labour. Yeah, I remember calling up Shash, my midwife, who is Sparrow's auntie, and she bought me some painkillers that kind of helped, but yeah, kind of helped for a couple of hours, and I kind of was able to relax. And I remember I had another bath, and my mum and Sparrow were like, obviously they weren't working, they were kind of just chilling at home. They were also super excited about the baby coming, and they were all like really in a good mood, and they started making sausage mash and homemade coleslaw. And I remember Sparrow grating onions. And obviously, I didn't want to eat. I didn't want to sleep. I didn't want to do anything. And I just remember like shouting to him, please stop doing that. And they were like, oh God, sorry. So yeah, I didn't eat anything, kind of didn't sleep. The contractions still were every five minutes. And this was obviously the second day of labor. I think in my head, because I was so young, a lot of the midwives were kind of telling me, oh, you'll have a fast labor, you'll have a really quick labor. So I kind of put it in my head that, you know, it would have been a day max. And obviously when I was on the second day, it was just like, oh God. But yeah, then that evening came, and I remember my mom being like, are you sure that you know, are you okay? Do you feel like you're okay? And I was like, I'm fine. And actually, this is when the hypnobirthing really kicked in. I remember kind of not really wanting to be around my mum or Sparrow. Obviously, the support from them was amazing and I could feel the love from them. But I remember not wanting anyone to touch me, wanting anyone to rub my back. And, you know, obviously they felt a bit helpless. And this is when hypnobirthing kicked in. I kind of kept on saying to myself that the pain that I'm feeling is not stronger than me because I am creating that pain. And that's always stuck with me. And I remember kind of being in a corner, breathing and repeating that to myself. And I think that kind of got me through, you know, that pain doesn't kill you. That pain's not, you know, going to defeat you because you are the person that's making that pain, you know. It's not stronger than you. So the evening came. I also remember feeling really, really hesitant to go back to the hospital because, one, I was really embarrassed about what happened with the first midwife kind of telling me I wasn't in labor. Secondly, I didn't want to get in the car and be in a car for 15 minutes while I was having contractions every 5 minutes. But yeah, that night came. You know, I was feeling really like, can I do this? And I did. I got through the night, and then it was about 4 in the morning where the contractions then went back to 2 minutes. And I remember telling my mom, and my mom was like, okay, let's go in. And still, I remember being like, are you sure? Are you sure? And she was like, yes, it doesn't matter if we go in five times, as long as you feel okay and as long as you feel safe, you know, that's fine. So we drove to the Withington again, and I was kind of telling myself, please, God, you know, please let this be the last time we drive there. And it was, thank God. And we got there, and there was this amazing midwife. I remember calling her an angel because she was this like beautiful blonde lady. She looked like a Swedish model. And I remember being like, you know, she checked, and I was 4 centimeters dilated, and she was like, yeah, you're in labor, don't worry. And she was so lovely and so soft and so gentle and just so reassuring. It made me feel so, you know, like I was there and I was in labor. It made me feel like I should have felt like at the beginning. And she was actually there with me the whole time, as well as Sparrow's auntie. Sparrow's auntie kind of got there a couple hours after I got there. They checked Iris's heartbeat, and it was kind of going up and down. Which meant I couldn't have her in the birth center, which was, I was kind of already 3 days in labor. I was kind of happy to do it anywhere as long as it was going to be soon. I didn't really mind. But I think I remember after kind of thinking, oh, I'm kind of upset that I wasn't able to have it in the birth center, but hopefully this time I'll be able to. We went up to the labor ward, and I remember just being super, super, super exhausted. I mean, I didn't sleep for, you know, three nights. I didn't sleep for two nights. She came on the third day. I didn't sleep for two nights. I didn't eat. I was just kind of like running on no steam. And I remember they kind of looked at me and kind of thought, oh goodness, she's going to struggle kind of thing. And they kept on offering me a epidural. And I remember being like, I really, really, really don't want one. I always kind of throughout my whole birth, throughout my whole pregnancy, I had told myself I didn't want to have an epidural. I think also because my mum had all three of me and my sisters at home, kind of always made me think I can definitely do that. And also I wanted to have Iris in the most natural way. I ended up being like, no, I don't want an epidural, but they gave me diamorphine, which is just a strong painkiller. Which obviously made me relax. It also made me go a bit loopy. I remember looking at my mum and being like, you have my pink knickers. You have my pink knickers, don't you? And she was just looking at me just like, oh, yeah, I do. I mean, I didn't even have any pink knickers. I don't know what the hell I was talking about. But I remember it just making me relax a little bit, and I could sleep. I remember having about 20 minutes sleep. And I think that brought on the labor super, super, super quick. You know, from the point of taking diamorphine to when Iris was born was about an hour, which I think my midwives were a little bit worried about, because they say they don't give you diamorphine unless they think that you're, you know, going to have the baby in about four or five hours, not 1 hour, because it can go through into the baby system, which it did. So when Iris was born, she was quite floppy and wasn't breathing properly, which was terrifying. And I remember being on all fours, and they put her through my legs, and I kind of picked her up, and I saw that she was a girl, and I was like, oh my goodness, it's Iris. Cause we had the name like way before she was born. I remember like holding her body and knowing something was up, and the midwives like took her off me, and they rang the alarm for the doctors to come, and they kind of had to resuscitate her, which was just so scary. But I also remember I remember lying there and being so unbelievably exhausted and caring so much about it, but I felt so numb. I remember that feeling, and I actually actually spoke about it with my sister-in-law not that long ago, about how when they give you your baby, you know, when your baby's born, you're supposed to like have this feeling of love and, you know, euphoria. And actually when they gave me to Iris, I was so confused and so scared and like just so taken back by all of it and exhausted that I just had no feelings inside of me. Well, I had no energy to feel anything. And I remember feeling like, oh my goodness, am I normal, you know, that I'm feeling like that? Obviously I loved her and obviously I cared, but you know, not that feeling that everyone tells you about on Instagram or what you read about. But yeah, they brought her down to NICU and I had my mum there, which was fantastic. So my mum said that she'll go down with her, and I was able to get some sleep. Sparrow was able to get some sleep. And then I remember waking up and just being like, oh my goodness, I think the sleep just gave me like, yeah, obviously just gave me so much energy and all that excitement, and gave me energy to feel things and, you know, feel love and feel excitement. And I remember waking up and just being like, I need to go to my baby. And yeah, we went and she was there, and it was just a really incredible but also strange feeling. I think when it's your first, you have no idea what it's going to be like. And then once you do it, it is kind of like it all flashes before your eyes, and then you've got this baby that's yours, and you have to, you know, you're its mum, you have to look after it, and you're its everything. And I think that was quite overwhelming. But we ended up being in the hospital for 5 days after that, which was actually great. They kept her in, obviously, because of the way she was not breathing when she came out. They just wanted to double check, you know, for infection or anything. And yeah, we were in hospital for 5 days. And actually, I remember it being so nice. There was the Whittington's in Highgate, and there's this amazing pizza place there. There's an amazing sushi place there. So Sparrow was going out every morning getting me croissants, and then every lunchtime getting sushi, or, you know, we must have spent hundreds of pounds on takeaways, but it didn't matter. But I remember feeling like super safe and just feeling like I can ask the midwives anything I want. You know, I just, yeah, it was kind of great being able to, you know, one ask, I can get all the information I need instead of being at home, being on Google, researching everything. And I actually remember feeling like, oh my gosh, what would I have done if I went home that, you know, straight away after? I mean, it would have been absolutely fine. And you kind of, being a mum, your maternal instincts kick in and you do just know exactly what to do. But I think with your first, you want to ask all the questions and you want to double check that you're doing everything right. I also remember feeling like the breastfeeding part. I was like my mum, I always wanted to breastfeed and, you know, do it the natural way. Yeah, I remember actually struggling at the beginning. She wouldn't latch. And I think that happens with most mums at the beginning. I remember the nurses going around telling like everyone who was on the ward about the baby's weight. And a lot of the time they say your baby loses 20% of its body fat. But obviously as a first-time parent, you don't know that. And I remember the nurse going into each room, well, each curtain, and hearing the mum cry and feeling like she, you know, she's not able to do it. And I felt exactly the same. But actually, you know, breastfeeding kind of like took on, and it was great to be able to have the nurses and midwives there to be able to help me. But yeah, that's my birth story. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. It's like that. It's 21 months ago, so it's like, gosh, you kind of forget it. And talking about it has really rejigged my mind and made me remember things and, oh, made me excited about doing it again.
That's so exciting. It's making me smile too. Oh, so exciting. And then when you did get home, how did you find the postnatal period and healing in general? Was it straightforward for you? And yeah, just let me know how you're feeling in general.
Yes. So I remember getting home, obviously, after 5 days of being in hospital. You know, I've already said that I actually really enjoyed being in hospital. I enjoyed being able to ask all the questions I wanted to. But obviously you miss your home comforts. I remember getting home and feeling like, okay, this is it. This is it. It starts. I think being in hospital and, you know, the birth period is kind of, you know, you're still up in the air and it's still kind of a bit of a dream. But as soon as you get home, it's like, okay, that's when life starts. And I remember feeling like, you know, it was weird. The last time I was here, I didn't have a baby. And then all of a sudden I'm here and I have Iris and she's that person. And she was always that person. And I remember feeling that was crazy. But yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing getting home. I remember absolutely loving the days and then the evenings just feeling like a little bit anxious. I've spoken to a couple of my friends that have had babies and they feel the same. It's like that night anxiety that you have, like the uncertainty of not knowing how the evening is going to go. But Iris is an amazing sleeper and she was an amazing sleeper. And, you know, the midwives and health visitor actually tell you not to, but we had Iris in bed with us. She kind of either slept on top of me or next to me. I think because I was breastfeeding on demand, it was kind of easier to have her in bed with me instead of having to get up and leave bed every time she woke up and needed a feed. But yeah, I remember just absolutely loved being at home and obviously all the visitors and having like my mum come over again and my dad and Sparrow sisters and, you know, my sister-in-law Kelly and my, you know, all my family. I remember it was just amazing and feeling really, really proud. And also feeling super grown up, like come over to my flat and see my baby at 22. I was like, oh my goodness, it's, you know, I've done it. I've done life. I just remember feeling, yeah, really, really happy about it. And breastfeeding kind of started to kind of go really, really well. Actually, as soon as I got home, I think I relaxed a little bit more and she latched. I also had a lot of help at the hospital. Like I said, I was there for 5 days and I had midwives and nurses kind of helping me because obviously I was always asking, am I doing it right? Am I doing it right? That was amazing. I remember watching loads of Netflix, eating loads of nice foods. I think I also kind of remember having visitors, but then also kind of having like a boundary of like, you know, me and Sparrow and Iris, this is our time as well. And don't kind of wish it all away with loads of visitors and kind of clogging your day up with loads of things to do. It was actually really nice to be able to just do nothing and kind of close the blinds at 2 p.m. and relax and eat and watch Netflix and love your baby and just, yeah, enjoy that.
And protect it, yeah. And then did you know that you were ready to start trying for your second, or did it happen organically? Can you talk us through that a little?
I actually felt like I wanted to wait a little bit longer. I remember saying to Sparrow, like, no, like, you know, Iris has just kind of gotten her sleep routine. We're able to go out a little bit more and have my mom look after her, or, you know, my sister-in-law or my sisters to look after her. And I remember just feeling like I had my freedom back a little bit. But Sparrow was like super, super like, you know, we got to do it. We got to do it. And I remember actually one day just being like, actually, you're so right. I do want a baby. I do want to do it again. I think seeing Iris and seeing how much she loves being around other kids and how, you know, when they get older, you kind of like they play on their own and you kind of look at them and think, oh God, you kind of feel a little bit sorry for them. You want them to have a play partner and someone they can just chill and watch TV with. And I actually thought, you know what, if I don't do it now, I'll do it in 2 years and actually it will become a little bit harder. I feel like, you know, when they're like a year or 2 years apart, you can kind of, they can eat at the same time still, they can bath at the same time still, they can go to bed at the same time still. So actually they kind of become more in sync than you think. And, you know, I guess I kind of wanted to wait, but in the back of my head, I always knew I wanted to do it quite close in age. So yeah, I remember just Sparrow being like, right, we got to do it, we got to do it. And actually I had a holiday book. This is quite funny. I had, me and Sparrow had our first holiday, you know, booked without Iris. I was going on a boat holiday with my friends. It sounds super like silly, but it was super great, super fun. And I remember feeling like, okay, I don't want to be pregnant for that. Obviously I want to be able to have a couple of drinks and some fun with my friends. And I mean, sod's law, I ended up finding out I was pregnant 2 weeks before I went, which was quite like, oh God, am I going to be able to go? And actually I went and had the best time. And it made me realize that actually I don't need to drink and I don't need to, you know, I don't actually need to not be pregnant to have fun. And I think I've realized that the second time round a lot more than the first, that actually, you know, the only difference is you're a bit tired, a bit bigger, and you can't drink. You know, you can still have fun and enjoy life, which I have been. Yeah.
So. And I remember as well, you and I, because we're Instagram friends first.
Yeah, that's it. We're Instagram friends.
I remember that we, you are actually the only person in my whole network who extended breastfed around the same time as the same duration that I did. And so I also wanted to ask you about that. And if you could just tell us a little bit about how long you chose to breastfeed Iris and if that affected your conceiving journey at all, or just talk us through that.
Yeah, because I actually remember seeing a post that you did, which I admired so much. And I actually remember speaking about it with a couple of my friends who follow you as well, that you put up your picture when you found out you were pregnant, when you were like, oh, I don't know how many weeks you were, 5-6 weeks. And I really admired that. I think, going off subject here, sorry, but I really admired you doing that, because I feel like, you know, when I found out I was pregnant, you kind of have this like thing that society tell you that you can't talk about it before the 3 months. And actually, I think that's really silly. But yeah, I just wanted to let you know I admired you for that. But the breastfeeding, I breastfed Iris for, she was about 1.5 when I stopped breastfeeding. And I mean, anyone you talk to who knows me, Iris was on the boob all the time. I absolutely loved it. It's one of my favorite things about my journey was breastfeeding. I just found it amazing. I found it amazing that the woman body can do that. And I also found it amazing how connected I felt with my daughter while I was breastfeeding.
Brilliant. All of that was super
goodness,
important.
I feel like I keep on doing this.
No, I'm going to keep recording because I appreciated everything you said. But I was mostly just asking, did your breastfeeding journey with Iris, did you choose to stop before you started conceiving, or just how organic, or just how was that timeline, I suppose, if you could talk us through that?
Yes. So actually, it sounds really silly, but I remember feeling like I wanted to kind of wean her off when she was about 1.5. I think obviously she was on it a lot, and I actually found that by the end of it she was kind of using me as a dummy. She never ever took a dummy, so yeah, she was using my boob as a dummy. Obviously I was going on this holiday me and Sparrow without Iris. And I remember feeling like, okay, that was quite a nice cut-off time. And yeah, it kind of, you know what, it was weird. It naturally happened in the sense that I think she was so ready for it to stop. Like, she didn't need it. I remember in my head it being like way worse for me. I feel like I was so, you know, attached to it and connected to it and connected, you know, connected so much with Iris when I was feeding her. I remember feeling like, I can't believe that I'm not going to have that ever again with her. I remember feeling super upset about it. I actually even remember going to the toilet and having a little cry about it. But yeah, I remember saying to myself, okay, it was a week before I was going away. I didn't want to leave her and, you know, her want the boob. I thought, okay, this is a good time. And I remember I was so bad. I always used to just whip my boob out and not even know I was doing it and be feeding her. And like my sister or my sister-in-law would be like, Grace, you're doing it again. And I'd be like, oh my God. You know, it was such a natural reaction that I'd do if she was crying or she wanted me. That I ended up having to put plasters on my nipples to actually stop myself from doing it. And yeah, she was absolutely fine with it. I think, like I said, she naturally kind of, it was a natural process. She was naturally ready to stop. And I think, you know, I keep on saying this to myself, I was naturally ready to stop. I think I was more affected than she was. But yeah, it happened and I will definitely breastfeed for as long or maybe even longer with this baby. I really think it's the most amazing thing you can do. But it's funny thinking back when I was telling my birth story about how I really struggled with it in the beginning. And I remember feeling like I always wanted to breastfeed, but, you know, having it in the back of my head, like maybe I won't be able to, because, you know, in all the hypnobirthing lessons and all the classes that you do and all the books you do, no one really ever touches on the fact that a baby doesn't latch straight away. Like, you know, some babies do, but naturally some babies can't. And yeah, I just remember feeling like really like, am I able to do this? And I am so happy that I was able to do it and so thankful I was able to do it for so long.
I think that's a really interesting point actually in general, because I've definitely in retrospect and what I'm currently feeling right now, it's like zooming out in general, I feel like there's so much emphasis and support just for the birth. And then it's kind of like, like for me, the visual is then you have your baby and you get to the end of the diving board and then like the healthcare industry
that's it, and you jump
pushes.
In and doing the
yeah. And they're like, good luck, bon voyage. And it's like, oh my gosh. Yeah.
And I remember I couldn't believe that. I couldn't believe that some people were just sent home after birth. I was like, you know, obviously, like I said, I was in hospital for five days. And I know I could have done it, but oh my goodness, I couldn't believe that people were just like, it's like, bye, good luck. You know, go off with your baby and try and keep it alive. Like, I couldn't believe that, you know, that's the way it is. Yeah.
It's very overwhelming and it's, yeah.
It is 100%. Yeah.
I'm like not okay with it. Even now, I don't know how to fix it or connect it. It's just very overwhelming, especially now that it's COVID and everything's like stopped postpartum. In the interest of time, I'm going to steer back to your next pregnancy and just ask, did you fall pregnant? Quickly, just tell me a little bit about your next pregnancy.
So Sparrow, obviously me and Sparrow decided, right, we're gonna try but not try like we did with the first one. Obviously I wasn't on any contraception and I had stopped breastfeeding so much, and I fell pregnant really, really quickly, but unfortunately I had a miscarriage at 7 weeks. I had a miscarriage.
And did you have to have, did you choose to do a DNC or was it physiological?
No, so physiological, it kind of naturally passed through. And I remember feeling really shocked about it. And also feeling quite alone in the whole situation. I guess I remember feeling, obviously I know that it happens to so many women, and you know, actually I was quite shocked about how many women I found out after I had the miscarriage that has had a miscarriage too. It's like I could not believe how common they are. But I remember just feeling like that, you know, no one really talks about it openly. It's funny, it's such a taboo subject. And I remember feeling quite like angry about that, and angry about how society kind of, you know, push it to a side because the, you know, the subject of it makes other people feel uncomfortable. But yeah, so I had a miscarriage, and obviously that was really upsetting, but I was quite logical about it. And I've always thought that, you know, you don't lose the baby, you just lose the shell. I always kind of held on to that a little bit. And, you know, the soul you don't lose, it's, you know, it's just the outside. And that kind of got me through, along with all the support I have and my family members and Sparrow and, you know, people are so lovely in that situation, especially women who have been through the same thing. You know, there was something really comforting in finding out that I wasn't the only one, and, you know, it happens in this, you can also get pregnant after, you know, it's not, you know, the end of everything. But yeah, I remember feeling really, really upset about that, obviously. And then I got pregnant like 2 weeks after it, which was very strange. I remember feeling like, okay, I hadn't taken a pregnancy test. So you're supposed to take like a pregnancy test after like a week after you have a miscarriage, just to make sure everything's passed through. And I remember I did that one, and then they sometimes say that you should do one then a week after, just to double check that everything definitely has passed through and there's nothing, you know, remaining inside. And, you know, and I remember not doing that. And then, yeah, I did a test, and I remember I was getting ready to go out for my mum's birthday. It was like a all-inclusive brunch thing, like a really expensive brunch that had alcohol included, and I took the test and it was positive, and I was like, oh my god, I'm not going to be able to go to this brunch. I remember that was the first thing I thought, which was so silly. I think I was just so shocked about it all. I remember feeling like calling Sparrow and telling him. But then also, I think I was quite scared to get too excited because obviously the miscarriage before, and I think maybe I had some kind of underlying like worry that it could happen again. Found out I was pregnant, and then I remember getting a doctor's appointment just to check everything was okay, and. Yeah, that was it, kind of.
And that was this summer when you found out, because I think we're about the same, or almost the same time along. So just going off my own timeline. So like that was, it was kind of a lull, in quotes, of the pandemic. But you are definitely like pregnant in a pandemic. And I'm just curious how you have found your care in general, and going to appointments alone, and how have you been feeling?
It's been strange. It's been very strange, obviously. It's also been quite strange not being able to like go out and kind of celebrate the pregnancy and, you know, see loads of people and enjoy it with loads of people, because obviously you have the, you know, insecurity of being out and getting corona. But it hasn't infected my appointments too much. Actually, saying that, it has. My first appointment was over the phone, which was fine. I found absolutely fine. And actually, it was quite nice doing that appointment over the phone and not having to go all the way to the Whittington to be asked some questions. And then I remember the 6 weeks scan. Is it the six? Do you get a scan at 6 weeks? It is 6 week scan, right?
I have only given birth via private, but I think usually it's around between six and eight weeks.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a 6 week scan. Sorry, I feel like the second time round you completely forget all the dates and times and. But yeah, the 6 week scan, I had to go alone. I actually forgot to say that when I had my miscarriage, obviously it was in the peak of Corona. I remember even going into hospital, I was quite nervous about. And yeah, I had to go into the appointment on my own and be told I was having a miscarriage on my own and cry with the doctor on my own. And I remember feeling like, that was something I will remember for the rest of my life. You know, Sparrow sitting outside of the ward. Well, no, sitting outside of, the ward. It kind of felt like something out of the 1920s, you know, when men weren't allowed in, you know, anything. Men weren't allowed to do with anything. Oh, I've completely gone off there. Sorry.
No, it's a really good point, actually, because that's like my whole like crux with this. These NHS trust rules in general is like, we're from the same household. Like,
I know.
A birth partner is not like a random, not like a visitor.
Yeah. And it's also like, if I get Corona, he will probably get Corona
as
well.
It's so backwards. And on top of that, like, that's a huge trauma piece. I've heard from a handful of women who have unfortunately have had miscarriages. So thank you for sharing, because it is a lot more common than women share, but they have had miscarriages during COVID-19 and had to go to that appointment alone.
Yeah.
And then have had to come back once pregnant at that 8 week scan, at that 12 week scan, and have to go alone. And it's just like, they're just not seeing women or birthing people as whole, as like individual case by case bases. No. And it's just very overwhelming. So I just wanted to acknowledge that trauma piece there.
Yeah, definitely. I remember feeling like, obviously, I completely understand. You know, when I went through the miscarriage, it was the peak of lockdown. And I think no one knew what the hell was going on. And I don't remember ever feeling like angry, but I remember feeling like very, very, very confused, like waiting in the chair, bleeding really, really heavily and being in so much pain. And sitting on this really uncomfortable tin chair while my boyfriend, who I live with, is like sitting outside, like, you know, 2 minutes walk away from me, when actually I kind of needed him there just to hold my hand and just kind of just be there. I remember waiting for ages and kind of ended up saying, like, how long is this going to take? Like, I'm going to bleed through my leggings. Like, I can't sit here all day. I remember the nurse who worked there, he felt really sorry for me and was kind of trying to speed the whole thing along. But yeah, it's a very, very weird time. But I think because I had the miscarriage and because I had that moment being there on my own, going through the pregnancy part hasn't been too bad because I have that to kind of contrast with. Obviously, that was like the worst thing for me. So actually going and seeing something and hearing something positive, like the 6 week scan and going and doing that on my own, I was actually okay with that. And then the 20 week scan, which is the big scan, they actually let Sparrow in. I think there were new rules that just came in, allowing the partner to go into the 20 week scan, which is great because actually that's also the one that you can find out the gender. We didn't find out, but I reckon for a lot of people, that's, you know, a landmark for a pregnancy. And
I'm glad he was able to join you. I know that's not the case for still a lot of women, which is frustrating. But so aside from the COVID heaviness in this pregnancy, have you been feeling good and finding it easy or the same or different than your first pregnancy?
Well, no, I've been finding it great. I mean, it's very different, obviously, because I have Iris to look after. We were saying before, you know, the first pregnancy, oh my goodness, like I napped all the time, you know, I'd literally, it was napping central. And actually now, once you've had, you know, once you've had one baby and your second pregnancy, you just can't do that. You've got another human to look after. You've got another human running around screaming, and there's just no chance of napping. But apart from that, I've been great. I think the whole lockdown thing, obviously it has been super rubbish, but then also it's been such an excuse to just stay in and relax and watch TV and eat nice dinners, you know, go on nice long walks and, you know, try and get out a little bit. But I really enjoy pregnancy. I always kind of, through my first one, I had a great time. And again, the second one, I feel great, and I feel like I have even more energy, to be honest. So yes, feeling quite grateful about that. Obviously, I know it's completely different with a lot of women. But actually, saying that, apart from feeling good in myself and feeling super happy in myself and mentally feeling great, I think the second time round, your body is a little bit more, I don't know how to explain this, a little bit more squishier and kind of already had a baby inside of you. So you kind of, I don't know, like the girdle pain I have is very annoying, and you know, I can't go out for longer than like 2.5 hours. But apart from that, I'm feeling good. Thank you. How are you feeling?
Yeah, about the same. Definitely a little bit elastic.
Yes, that's it. Elastic. That's the word I was looking for. It's kind of, I think I said gooey.
Yeah, I think that's an apt word. Well, I'm gonna wrap up now because I have had such a lovely time hearing.
Amazing.
Tangents Sorry, included have been no no Grace, truly thank you so much for being so candid and sharing and exploring some of the hard topics as well. I really appreciate everything that you shared. So
no, thank you so much for having me on and doing a podcast like this. I think it's super important that women can, you know, tune in and actually listen to real stories, especially I think young women. I remember being 22 and like having no idea, and also no idea, you know, where to look and where to, you know, find real stories. But yeah, it's great that you're doing this.
I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. If you'd like to see more of Grace's story, head over to BritishBirthStories.com for more. See you next week.